Welcome to The Ether. Today is Thursday, March 10th, 2022. This episode of The Ether is brought to you by Talus. Talus Protocol is the NFT platform for independent artists on Terra. Talus helps to provide artists with the tools and resources needed to transition from traditional art into the NFT world. With their V1 launch coming soon, Talus will be the place to see real-world art reflected on Terra. Be sure to join their Telegram and follow Talus on Twitter for updates on their roadmap, validator, and other Talus news. Find your next favorite artist on talus.art. This episode of The Ether is also brought to you by Orbital Command, a community validator on Terra dedicated to educating, expanding, and promoting the Lunatic community. Follow Orbital Command on Twitter using the link in the show notes to receive regular threads on Terra protocols and yield strategies, news, resources, and Twitter space discussions. You can also support their community efforts by considering them next time you're delegating or redelegating your Luna. Find out more at orbitalcommand.io. TerraSpaces appreciates the support from all our sponsors. Today on The Ether, Udiverse explores the metaverse with Oxfam Faron. Let's take a listen.
Stuff like that.
They're starting to synchronize with everything.
So, yeah. Well, I'm going to ask you a lot about, are you like right now on the highway?
I'm literally walking in the street because I like to speak when I walk. I cannot speak if I'm just not doing anything. I need to walk to be able to think.
Good.
Even when in my sessions of like thinking about the project and working creatively, I go on walks and I go there.
Good.
I cannot think.
That's good for the audio experience of everyone else too, because it feels real when you're in the field.
I'm not in the studio with 15 screens or whatever. Like Kobe has an amazing studio. I don't have this kind of stuff.
Does he only have one studio? That would be embarrassing. That would be embarrassing.
I don't know.
Okay. Tell me. I don't know either. I was never invited to one of Kobe's studios. Okay, I think we can start and I guess, you know, before we do, I should just say, just to be clear, wait, you know what? The first thing I should ask you is how do I pronounce your name?
Can say Fan. Fan is good.
Just Fan.
Fanfaron is Fan is good.
What does Fanfaron mean? What language is that?
It's in French, actually. It's how my friends used to call me. It's a nickname.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
How they used to call you before you lost all of your friends.
Yeah, I don't even remember anymore. Now my life is in the metaverse. I only know my friends online.
Exactly.
I don't remember. That's the past life. It's like the Matrix. When you take the pill, you cannot go back anymore.
Yeah. If you say so, look, I told you I'm old. I don't know. I'm trying to believe you.
I need to pill you now.
Exactly.
You're one of the boomers that I need to pill.
Exactly. Here's what's going to happen. I'm going to try to convince Fan that the metaverse is a stupid buzzword and it's silly. And he's going to try to change my mind. And we're going to see how it works.
This is going to be fun.
Just to be clear, though, I need to be clear to everyone here. I'm a big fan of Fan, so I've been trying to help, you know, the little that I can for a while, and you know that includes like investments in his projects because I believe in what he's doing. So if people here think that I'm like objective, I'm not. However, However, I still think I'm not sure about the metaverse thing. That's for real. I'm not trolling. I'm not sure about it. So we gotta find out. And
if I can convince a boomer
exactly that
it's not just a buzzword. I mean, obviously it's a buzzword, but not just that. Then I think we win. I think the Ragney family will agree that we win.
There's a Jewish saying. I'm Israeli, so there's a Jewish saying that if you can save one soul, then you save the entire world. So if you can save exactly. one boomer, then
I save the entire world.
Yeah, or at least the world of boomers. You save the boomerverse. Yeah.
Well, that's a big fat world. If I can save the boomerverse, then it's pretty intense.
Yeah. Already. Yeah, I agree. Okay, so I want to start with this tweet. I tweeted this yesterday, and it's a quote from yeah. Gabe Newell. I don't know, like, do I need to introduce Gabe Newell? It feels wrong. He's the...
You're a boomer, so maybe you know him, but I'm sure some of the listeners don't know him.
The younger ones don't know him. Is that what you're saying? Yeah, I guess that's true. So he's the CEO of Valve. That's a company that used to make video games.
What is Valve?
And they used to make popular video games, even. And he's like, he's on an interview to PC Gamer or whatever it was. And he's saying, like, most of the people talking about Metaverse, they have absolutely no idea what they're talking about. And apparently they've never played an MMO, which boomers should know what an MMO is. It's a massively multiplayer yeah. online game. Maybe the younger kids don't know what it is. But he's, you know, what he's really saying, and he's quoted in that article, he's kind of saying more about that. He's saying, you know, we've been playing World of Warcraft for like a decade, two, three. I don't know how old World of Warcraft is by this point. And people have, you know, they've been customizing their avatars. Like, I see everyone talking about how they can pick their own identity in Web3 and in the metaverse and whatever. But, you know, we've done that on MMOs for many, many years.
Yeah.
And you didn't need NFTs for that. You didn't need crypto and blockchain and tokens or whatever. And it was, you know, it worked fine. So what's the whole yeah. new, what's the whole new thing here is his question. And also mine, well, as fellow boomers.
Yes. Yeah. Well, actually, the inspiration to build Ragnarok came from the MMOs that I used to play back in the day. I used to play lots of World of Warcraft, and basically the idea that we're trying to do, and the big difference with the Metaverse is the Metaverse is only a prolongation of the MMORPG, basically, because there's two main differences. So the first difference is the Web3 thing. Web3 is also a buzzword, but the Web3 means that you own things within the game that are real versus something that is purely non-monetizable. So you can earn things and you can own things within the game that you can exchange versus real concrete money. And this is the big difference with former MMOs in the sense that, well, imagine if you played, I mean, you played World of Warcraft, obviously. Well, imagine that all the weapons obviously. That you had and the character that you had, well, you own him and you can exchange him and level him up and exchange him with other people or sell him or buy other characters. And basically, that's what we did in World of Warcraft. Basically, what you did is sell your account if you grinded lots of hours or buy an account. If you're new and want to spend money.
Yeah, exactly. So we did do that. We did have that. Like, we had characters that we built up. We had items. We had, you know, like, people would mine gold in World of Warcraft and sell that. Like, people would do those things. So what's different?
Exactly. Well, what's different is that instead of selling an account, well, basically, you can exchange that in real marketplaces that are outside of the game. The beauty of Web3 is that everything is interoperable, and is because, for example, your NFT, you can use it in your world or you can use it in another world, or your item, you can use it in your world and you can use it on another world. That's the beauty of the metaverse, is the interoperability between things. And it's only possible because of Web3 and owning things that are on a chain that is independent from the game or the metaverse itself. The metaverse is different elements that create a new world, in the sense that Ragnarok is a part of the metaverse. And by combining other projects and just being able to move from one project to the other with the assets that you own truly is what creates the metaverse. And the second thing is, when you own something, for example, if you loot a dagger on World of Warcraft, for example, can you sell it? Or even Call of Duty, for example, if you play now, it's not an MMORPG, but Call of Duty, and you level up a weapon or whatever, can you really profit from all your grinding hours and sell the item or the character that you build if you want to do that? Can you own buildings and customize them within the game and change the game itself? Well, even on World of Warcraft, it was not possible because it was governed by the game itself. And the beauty of Web3 and the metaverse is governed by the community, in the sense that everything can be customized and the game really feels alive. So there's an extra dimension to the MMO space, like the massively multiplayer online part of the MMORPG is pushed to another dimension with owning and earning, plus all the social aspect. Because when you used to play World of Warcraft back then, you used to hang out with your friends digitally. But now imagine if it was not just enclosed to people that just wanted to play, but open to everyone, like a true social network. Like you would hang out on Discord or Twitter or any other type of metaverse, because Twitter and Discord are just some other kinds of metaverses. So imagine if you could do that within something that is quite immersive. And when you mix the Web3 element and the massively multiplayer, which is pushed way more into hyper-social, and the role-playing aspect, which is characteristics of the old-school MMORPGs, when you combine these three elements, you get a metaverse.
Okay. So you said a few things there, and I'm gonna push back and ask for some examples now, because I'm a boomer. So like we didn't talk yet about Ragnarok, which is the product you're building, and we will soon. But I want to ask you about, like, you know, you mentioned moving items between games, and I've seen people talk about that, obviously, very often in the context of metaverse and Web3 and whatever. But can you give me examples of where it's like actually happening and to good effect? Like, any games that are doing this yet?
Well, I was seeing this yesterday with Clementines in our AMA. Basically, today there's no really a game yet to come in this industry that is truly playable. There's one other game, which is like us and is World Wide Web 3, which is a social experiment. It's not an MMORPG. It's a social place where you can hang out. And it's the only place where today you have a glimpse of what things can be in the metaverse. But today there's no game, none, that has this element of a real game. Not even talking about interoperability between metaverses, because for interoperability, you need at least two games. We don't even have one. But
yeah. It's a good point.
Yeah. And you know, I was saying this yesterday also, is the metaverse is not a new thing. Metaverse I've been here for the past 20 years. And metaverse started with MySpace, and then with Facebook, with MSN Messenger, then Instagram, then Twitter, then Snapchat. Like, all these things that are digital, completely digital, where you create an alternate life, a meta life, if you want, were the foundations of the metaverse that we're going to see now. So the metaverse takes all that social environment and mix it at a bigger stage. And the advantage of having something that you can play is that you mix the game elements into it. And then when you mix all those elements, it becomes like a real world. Because what defines the world right now? What do you do during your day? You earn money, you own things, you hang out socially, and you live. And basically, when you take all these elements and you combine them digitally, when you can own your own ID, which is your NFT, and play with it, bring it to life, and do social activities and kill monsters, which could be related to a job, for example, and earn rewards or own things within that world, well, you create a new dimension, which is a completely new world.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. Still hard for me to wrap my head around this because I can't see it and feel it because we don't have that yet.
Yeah,
but I get what you're saying. Yeah, and so okay, so let me ask you another question. Like, let's say that you had Blizzard that's developing World of Warcraft. They show up and they say, okay, look, we're not going to do the interoperability thing because we don't want to have your items interoperable with other games. But everything else we're going to give you. You want a marketplace? We'll give you a marketplace of items. You want to sell your actual account? We'll give you a marketplace for that. You want to, you want to charge rent for the properties that you own? We'll let you do that. Like, they give you all of those things. They just don't give you interoperability with other games. They could do that if they wanted to, right? Like within their current ecosystem and the technologies they use, they wouldn't really need to add anything new.
Yeah.
So I guess my question is, like, why do you think they're not doing it? And why do you think that in Web3 people do want to do that?
It's a beautiful question because I have the perfect answer for this. okay. So basically, let's go with the first step of the question. Why are they not doing this? Because basically today, you saw that maybe with Ubisoft that was trying to make NFTs, all the players of the traditional players are completely against NFTs because they think it's a scam or whatever. So they're completely against. So basically there's an innovator's dilemma that is characteristics of all the, and it's a big book about from Clayton Christensen that was saying that the big players will never be the first movers. Why? Because they're too comfortable in their own space. Plus, they don't want to endanger today's user base for a promise of a new user base. So why did they not do this is because they don't want to hurt the players that they have already to go to uncharted territories. So what they'll do, these types of big companies, is that they will wait for someone to make something successful, and they will either compete with it or buy him out. Because right now it's too small for them to even, I mean, obviously they care, but it's too small and it's too dangerous for them to go there. So that's why they don't do this right now. And I'm not saying that they will not do this in 2-3 years. Probably they will. And for sure they will. This leads me to the second step of my answer is the big difference about owning things in a game and owning things everywhere is basically if you own the Zimbabwe money and you cannot put it out of your country, is it worth anything? And you cannot spend it in the US or Europe or another country. If the government limits you into using that money somewhere, is that money?
Yeah, so you're saying like if you can't use it in other games, then maybe it's not even worth it. I think you're cutting out a little bit though. Did you walk into a cave?
No, it is.
Are you
it
on
is.
A quest?
No, I'm here. Obviously it's worth something. But is it worth as much as if you could move around that money everywhere? Obviously not.
Yeah. Yeah, I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying.
If it's isolated compared to everything else, well, there's a loss of value in those elements. Plus, if you add to this that people coming from other worlds, because there's not just a World of Warcraft. There's plenty of other games. Let's just take different games. There's League of Legends. There's Fortnite. There's, Call of Duty. There's, there's plenty of games where you take a part in a role play. And each game is a strong ecosystem within itself. But imagine if you combine all those games into a big world and you could just go with your Fortnite character and hang out in League of Legends, or you can hang out in World of Warcraft or whatever, and you can own things in the different types of games, right? You can hang out in GTA or whatever, and everything is just connected between each other. Well, I create a new dimension.
But this is like so hard to imagine, like how is this going to work? Like, you know, like for example, like, you know, as far as I can tell, Ragnarok is like sort of a 2.5D kind of sort of game. And then, you know, Fortnite is a fully 3D game. So yeah. Like, how am I going to take a 3D character, move it into a 2D game and then back? And obviously, like, even if you stay within 3D games, then there are completely different stylistic choices and creative choices that each game makes. And some is more cartoon-like and some is more realistic. And like, how are you going to move between those things? It feels so hard to imagine. Like, how do you see that?
That's the beauty of the NFTs, is because with a token that is the NFT, with your identity, you can attach to it different elements that are compatible with other games. For example, our profile picture, well, in our game, it comes with a full body sprite 2.5D character that have lots of animations and lots of abilities to do within the game. And basically, you can attach to that NFT a 3D model, and be it, you can walk around in Minecraft, for example, because you attach to that NFT something with the project that you want to collab with. And basically that NFT is your identity. And whenever you move from a project to another, there's the asset that is linked to that NFT that you can play with it inside the other metaverse. And basically, since it's always your same address, it's not your NFT is linked to your address, but basically if you own things in Minecraft or in Ragnarok or whatever, it's always linked to your address.
Hey, this is Finn here. At this point in the space, it dropped, they got rugged, and then they started another space, but they didn't hit record on it, but lucky for them, we were there. So the next space is going to start right here.
Fan, sir, can you hear me? Great. All in all, it's really going great. I feel like we're really proving the metaverse here.
Yo.
Oh, there you are. Okay.
There we go.
All right. There we go. Now I'll try to give you a. Yeah, I'll try to give you a co-host invite too. We'll see if that works. But either way, let's do the. Yeah, I sent you an invite just now. But, okay, I think it works. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can. Can you?
Okay. Yeah. Good. We made it. Okay, take two. Yes, we only lost like 80% of the listeners. It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. It's all fine.
So where were we? We were talking about what would it look like to move items between games that have different stylistic choices and stuff.
Yeah, because you were saying that the difference was what if World of Warcraft or Blizzard decided to give the ability for people to own things within their game? And they already do. But the big thing about owning something is that you can do anything you want with it. And owning something within one environment do not determine that you truly own it. It's like owning money in the bank. What if the bank shuts down? That's the beauty of crypto, because you truly own it in your wallet. Unless MetaMask bans you because you're in Venezuela, that's different. But you own the thing and you can do whatever you want with it.
Yeah. Yeah. So then I asked you, like, in the context of owning something in a way that you can move that even between games, like, yeah. what would it look like stylistically if you know? And then you said, you know, well, you have the NFT, and you can have an NFT with multiple versions. So there will be a 2D avatar version, a 3D avatar version. So I guess my next question is, like, who does those things? Like, who makes those versions of the NFT?
The project. And that's why collaboration between projects is extremely important in this space. Because, for example, if we just collaborated with Frontier, who is backed by Ubisoft, and imagine, I mean, their game is entirely 3D. Ours is 2.5D. But the idea is that when you own the token, you are able, I mean, on tomorrow's quest, you're going to be able to walk around with the Watcher, that is Frontier's character. So you're going to be able to move in the game with Frontier's character. And we made the design of this, and it's because we collaborated with them. So by collaborating with projects, well, each project, each part of the metaverse is willing to create an asset for the other project. And it's replicable, because if I do this for you, then you do this for me. And then both of us benefit from this. The addition of our two projects is bigger than the individual projects. And if you have enough people, because it's just starting now, it's not mature yet. So if you have enough people, and that's why I believe growing the Web3 together is extremely important, because if you have enough people within this thing, then the flywheel will start, because more and more projects will integrate. And there's probably new industries that are going to build around this interoperability between the different dimensions. And it's all linked to your NFT. That's why your NFT is so valuable. It's not just because it's your profile picture on Twitter. It's because you own that, and it becomes your digital identity, your meta identity. And you can go anywhere. It's like a passport. If you get your passport, you can move around the world and nobody will tell you anything. That's the power of the NFT. The NFT becomes your meta identity, and then you can move around with it, and you can own things, and you can earn things, and you can, there's lots of things that are possible with that NFT. So it's not just a profile picture. It's way more. It becomes you in the metaverse.
Right. So you're saying, like, you guys at Ragnarok, you're partnering with this other game. So you guys are going to build, like, so items from their game, you guys are going to build, like, a nice 2D version that matches your style and have it available in your game. And they're going to do the same for items from your game. And then people can just jump around between them. It's a cool partnership. You know what? Let's do this. How about you tell us a bit more about, like, you know, about Ragnarok, the project you're working on, and why you decided to start it. I know you have a lot of thoughts about the larger NFT space and things that you think could be improved. So why don't you tell us about what is you're building and why you decided to go after that?
Definitely. My background is in architecture. I'm an architect. I have a master's degree in architecture. And after working in China for 4 months, I decided to quit to launch my business, my first business, which I failed. Then I launched my second business, which I succeeded and is still running now and growing, and I'm passive in there. And then I launched my third business, which I sold 8 months ago. After that business, and I was into crypto since 2016. End of 2016 was introduced by some friends, and came back into crypto after I sold my last business. So came back 7 or 8 months ago now. And personally, I'm a huge fan of animes, and I was a huge gamer when I was younger. And I was seeing this trend of the metaverse going with the Facebook and everything. And I was being frustrated of what I was seeing, because there was two different types of of games, if you can call them that way. The first type of on the first spectrum were the play to earn type of games. And in those games, there's no fun. You're just there for the money. You click, you earn, that's it. There's no fun in it. You grind to make some money. And the more the
it's basically work.
It's basically work. You just click instead of putting the hammer against the nail. It's purely work. And the problem of those kinds of game is, well, first of all, it's not fun. Second of all, the problem about having the sole purpose of the game being earning is that the more players come into the game, the less earning power is possible for the newcomer. So it's skew everything towards the first members of the community and the whales versus a newcomer that just comes in. Because the sole purpose of the game is to earn money. And the second, on the second end of the spectrum, the other end of the spectrum, there is the AAA studios trying to build with tens or 50 millions of dollars invested to create something immersive, 3D, VR, kind of crazy stuff, and build in silos for the next 2-3 years. Like they would literally build a game for PlayStation and then integrate crypto in it. Then they build their own blockchain, and it's, you need to download it on your computer, and it's quite complex for anyone to play that game into crypto. So between those two gaps, I was seeing a huge opportunity in the sense that I wanted to create a fun and entertaining game that was accessible to everyone. You don't need to download a 70 gigabytes game on your computer and run your own node to be able to own something on a closed blockchain. But the idea was to create a browser-based game where you could just go have fun socially and interact with other people and have all the experience of the MMORPGs, like the role play, the slaying the monsters, the leveling up, the classes. And it's all made possible because of the technology of HTML5 on browser and Phaser that have been growing in the recent years. And you could create a strong architecture of a true game with native browser code, which was not possible before. Obviously, it's not going to be 3D because 3D, you're limited on browser. It's impossible. No one can build a 3D game on browser. So that's why we decided to build it 2.5D, which is not like completely 1000% immersive like a VR would be, but it's immersive enough for you to spend time. It's more immersive than Facebook or Discord, basically. And basically, right, you could create a whole social network there and have the whole role-playing game aspect.
Okay, so what do you do in that game?
So there's two different things in the game. So it follows exactly our lore, which we're writing. We're writing a manga alongside the game, and the manga evolution goes hand in hand with the development of the game and the new content creation. And in that lore, there's two different worlds, if you want. The first type of environment is the towns. And the towns in our lore are controlled by the cyborgs, and the towns are made exclusively for entertainment, fun, social interaction, enjoyment. And those towns are made for humans to be distracted by reality. And basically those towns are where all the social aspect will happen, in the sense that you will be able to come in with your punk or with your bored ape or with your Frontier Zero or with your Karafuru or whatever, or with your Ronin, and just hang out socially in a big social place. You could exchange things, you could buy buildings, you can chat with people, like you would do on Discord or Twitter, but at another dimension. So that's the first environment where it's accessible to everyone, and everyone can just come and hang out. And then the there's the other aspect, which is the role play. And the role play is exclusively accessible to the Ronin, who are the Ragnarok NFTs. And in that role play, you will be able to slay monsters with your NFT. So basically you land with your NFT and you will be able to slay monsters, level up, change classes. So your NFT can become a hacker or an assassin or whatever. And you can loot objects, you can craft them into NFTs, resell them in the marketplace, go to the auction house, and combat other players, join a guild, go on tournaments with wars between the guilds. Like there is a whole, like you would do the same on World of Warcraft. So that's the two dimension of Ragnarok. The first is social. So it's truly an MMORPG, but pushed to a new dimension.
Right. So you can, without spending anything, you can jump into the game, you can do the social parts of it, you can run around, yes. You can showcase whatever NFTs you own.
Yeah. You can talk to the people. Marketplace. Yeah.
Yeah. And when you want to play the actual, you know, and you want to do some questing and battling and stuff, that's when you need to buy the Ronin, you said. You need to own one of the Ronin NFTs, right?
Exactly.
Okay. That makes, I guess a lot of people talk about that, right? About how do you pull in players who can't necessarily go in and spend, you know, money on these characters or items or whatever it would be in whatever game. So I guess having like two tiers could help. And still, like, you know, I don't know how much, how much these Ronins are going to go for in the future. But if it does end up being, you know, let's say hundreds of or thousands of dollars, then how are people going to get to know the actual gameplay if the barrier to entry is high, which is a problem with a lot of kind of free games, right?
Yeah. So basically the idea is with the Ronin Zero that you will own, you will be able to breed and create new generations of Ronin. And as the game matures and as the player base evolves within the next year or two, the game will become more mature. And as the game becomes more mature, well, basically the Ronin population for the latest generation that have almost zero power when they land, will grow. So basically, even if the price of the Ronin Zero is, I don't know, like 100 ETH, for example, the latest price of the latest generation that are useless, that cannot breed beside, they can only play. They cannot breed, they don't have additional stats. Like they almost have no bonuses at the end, no items like the Ronin Zero have. And those at the end of the, not at the end, but as the game matures more, the latest generations will cost less and less. So our objective is to bring those latest generations in the design that we're doing for the breeding mechanics is to bring those latest generations, and then it will just be a flat line right under $100. And right under $100 is like a game in PlayStation. It's the same price. But you have another dimension to it, is that you can actually own things and earn things from the game.
Gotcha. Okay, so there's going to be like, they're going to be the first ones, the Gen Zero ones, and they're going to be more, people, you could hope they would be more valuable because you would be able to breed more next generations with them. Yeah. But there will always be enough generations for new players to come in more affordable prices. That's the kind of goal here, right?
Exactly. So the first generation, the Zero Ronin, have strong advantages. They can breed unlimitedly. I mean, obviously not every second. It's all designed with the cooldowns. But they can breed unlimitedly. They have the lowest price of breeding. They also have items that you can use in the game. So basically a Ronin lands with zero to seven items with him. So basically, you can mint a Ronin and mint also a weapon, like a Zion sword, or you can also a Zion sword that you can use to slay monsters, or you can mint with that Ronin a Scouter, and that Scouter increases your agility, or you can mint a Bubblegum with that Ronin, and that Bubblegum increases your HP regeneration. So basically, those Ronin Zero have added bonuses that provides them with an advantage in the game. And it's a strong advantage in the beginning, but as the hours come in and the Ronin play, the strong advantage diminishes over time. There will still be a strong advantage of stats from the Ronin Zero compared to the other generations, but the advantage will be, for example, if a Ronin Zero is level 100 and a Ronin Generation 20 is level 100, the difference between them will not be as big as the difference between a Ronin Zero at level 10 or a Ronin 20 at level 10.
All right. So, are you already seeing those dynamics play out, like those Ronins mint already, or not yet?
So the Ronin Zero, we're going to mint them at the end of March, at the end of this month.
End of this month. Yeah. So, yeah. And so, what do people do? They go to your Discord and they spam you for a whitelist. How does it work?
that's actually what a lot of people are trying to do, but we give them the NPC role, and that NPC role, well, basically you cannot do anything. You just are in the gulag and you're just waiting for someone to rescue. So basically what we're trying to do is the design that we're trying to make with the mint list is there's three aspects of them. The first aspect are the core members of Ragnarok. And without them, Ragnarok would not be the same. And those are the most authentic members, the members that are truly helping everyone out, that are extremely creative and really helping people out. And those are the strongest members of our community. And to them, we handpick each and everyone, and we give them a pill mint list. And that pill mint list will give you 50% discount compared to the last price of the Dutch auction for public. And then there's the other layer above the core, which is the pixels. There's 1,000 pill mint list. And then there's the other layer just around the core of the pill, which is the pixel list. And for the pixel mint list, it's basically all of our partnerships and other members of the community that engage socially. And really are trying to bring something to the community, and or coming from other projects. Like we did this with Frontier, we're doing this with Clementines, we're doing this with Karafuru, like all the with Cyberkongs pretty soon. Oh shit, I released something. I said this. All right. We're trying to bring other projects with us, strong members of other communities with us. And those guys get the pixel mint list. And the pixel mint list is basically, they get the access to one Ronin at the last price of the Dutch auction. And so everything starts with the Dutch auction. So we reverse the process. We didn't do the Dutch auction at the end. We did the Dutch auction at the beginning because we want the market to decide what is the right price for the Ronin. And then the whitelisted people will get their price pegged to that last price. So the public sale will happen at start. It's going to be the first event. And we're going to say the date. And basically, they will be able to come. They have a limit of five. They have a limit of five Ronin they can mint at once. It's batch minting. The fee is extremely low, and because we have innovated on the smart contract. So basically, yeah, they come, they mint. There's the Dutch auction where the price will decrease by 5% every 20 minutes. And and the last price of the Dutch auction that the market settles in then reflects the price for the pixel list. and then the pill list.
Right, right. Yeah, I get it. Yeah, I think, you know, the whole Dutch auction versus like a flat price is obviously a big debate in the NFT world. I think, you know, I think it makes sense to have auctions because otherwise you're just paying, you're just doing a gas war and end up paying the money to the miners and no one benefits from that. But then you also have a way to encourage people who are actual participants in the community. You do give them a benefit on top of the normal auction. I think it makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, this huge debate about Dutch auction and everything is because there's predatory projects that have made this Dutch auction start at crazy prices, like 3 Ethereum or 4.2 recently that I saw. And those crazy projects just are taking a mercenary vision into the Dutch auction. And that's what made the Dutch auction look bad. But the Dutch auction is good when you have a fair price, not a crazy high price, but a fair price. And then you give the opportunity to the market to decide approximately what will be the price around there. But obviously, if you start at 5 Ethereum, or whatever, or 4 or 3, well, basically you're trying to make your community member or the buyer the customer, and those kind of projects are the projects that have created such a bad reputation for Dutch auction. But Dutch auction is the best way to give a fair and reasonable price, and basically you give the vote to the market to decide what is the right price for it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, the one type of audience that it's maybe not the best for is people who are just looking to flip the NFT
exactly
within a few hours or a day.
Yeah.
Because then they're unlikely to get below market price when they buy the NFT. So they don't like it. But if what you want is to grow a long-term community of people, then it might be better.
Exactly.
Of course, we'll see, but it might be better.
A whole another aspect is that we give 32% of the Ronin secured to our community. So it's almost double that any other project. It's with the mint list. You give access to the true believers and long-term believers on the project without any gas war. And you let the market first decide what is the right price, and then you give them the Ronin at that price. So basically what you're saying to the community is, all right, the market has decided on this price. I don't know, let's say 0.7 Ethereum. The market has decided on this price. Well, now you have the opportunity to buy it or not. It's your choice. And that's why we did the Dutch auction in the beginning and not at the end, because we want to give the community the choice to still say no. Like, I don't agree with that price. I'm not buying. Or I agree and then I buy. Then you give them the choice, which is completely the contrary of other projects because they do the pre-sale before. So basically, it's like, yeah, everybody got this at this price and then they make the public sale afterwards. So if the public sale is a flop, then all the pre-sellers are kind of fucked. And if it's a good sale, then it's a lucky number. But that's why we thought it was extremely important to invert the process.
Yeah, yeah. And by the way, you said 0.7 ETH. I can guess why. You have this obsession with the number 7. What is it?
Yeah.
Explain this to me.
Yeah.
Explain it to me like I'm 7.
Yeah, explain it to you like it's... All right, so my big inspiration for this is 7 crystal balls from Dragon Ball. And basically, there's going to be something in the game that is related to the number 7 and something related to the pills. And it's something that we don't want to reveal completely yet. But there's I gave you the reference of our thinking, and I gave you the two elements that can spark your imagination.
Yes. Okay. I thought maybe I could pull out more out of you, but I guess not.
No.
I guess not. Are you planning a big party on July 7th of 2077.
Who tells you the metaverse is not set in that date? But yeah, uh-huh. 77, I'll be old.
I will probably just not be, but yeah. But yeah, that's fair enough. That's fair enough. No, it's good. You know, I did want to ask you, like, so, you know, the game is, it's not out yet. I know that you guys have a demo out, and obviously the NFTs are not out yet. A lot of it is going to be rolled out over the next months, weeks and months. And but still, you know, the thing that attracted me personally to your work was that it was very clear there's a, you know, very vast community building around it that seems like it was built, you know, kind of from the ground up. I didn't see a lot of involvement from, you know, like big brands and big VCs and big whatever. It seems like a lot of interest kind of came from the bottom. So how does, you know, you're building a game, you're in the process of building it, it's obviously it's not ready yet, and yet you have this community. How does that come to be? Like how you know, how do people get excited over something that is still in the building process? And how do you see the community getting involved in those stages?
Yeah. That's probably the most unique aspect of Ragnarok compared to every other project in the space, in the sense that we don't build in silos for 2 or 3 years and then we release something. It's in our philosophy to build in layers. And basically what it does is every 2 weeks, there's a sprint with our team, and every 2 weeks, there's something new that happens. So basically, it's all going to start with the NFTs that we're going to drop at the end of this month. I mean, it started already, but when the NFT starts, every 2 weeks, there's going to be something. So 2 weeks afterwards, the reveal, 2 weeks afterwards, you're going to be able to play with that NFT inside the game. 2 weeks afterwards, you're going to be able to breed them. 2 weeks afterwards, you're going to be able to exchange them and do a whole and experience the whole marketplace within the game. And in sprints of 2 weeks, the game is going to evolve. So there's no finish line. It's an ongoing process that involves everybody around. And in those 2 weeks, we gather feedback, we iterate, we're nimble, and we change some stuff or improve stuff that the community didn't like or even like some awesome ideas that the community has. So we're building alongside with them. And basically, it will all start really growing in May, because in May you will have the foundations of the architecture of a true MMO. So the backend architecture of the whole game is going to be ready in May. So basically all the levels, the inventory, the classes, the level ups, the experience points, the monsters, the combat system, all the foundations are going to be available in May. And starting from that moment in time, every 2 weeks, along with the manga chapters, there's going to be new content that is created in the game. And that new content will allow you to explore more and more the game itself.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds cool. Every 2 weeks, I mean, look, it should have been every 7 days because of your obsession with the number seven, but I'm okay with every 2 weeks. And I wanted to ask you, you know, I think we're coming up on the hour, and I'll if you still have time, I will probably want to get some people up for Q&A.
So yeah, like, definitely.
I will have another last question before that, but mm-hmm. You know, from now, if anyone has any question, you can request permission to go on stage now, and I'll let you in a couple of minutes. So my next question is about your blockchain of choice. So I know that you guys kind of made a change recently. I think you were planning to work on one of the other layer ones, and you ended up choosing to work with Avalanche. And I think, mm-hmm. I think it was some sort of a combination between Avalanche and Ethereum. So can you tell us more about that and why you decided to make that choice and that jump?
Yeah, so basically we wanted to start building on Harmony, but then Harmony experienced lots of RPC issues and lots of downtime and everything. So Harmony was not sustainable for long term. So we decided to switch the game on another project, on another blockchain that was more stable, as fast, and trying to be as cheap as Harmony for the transactions. And that choice, there was only two blockchains that were three blockchains that were interesting, that the L1s that were doing this type of thing. And the choice that we made for Avalanche is because they're extremely stable and the team is incredible. They're really trying to help you out as much as possible. And the fees are low and the network is stable and fast. So that's why we chose Avalanche. But we decided to have the NFTs on Ethereum because that's where the culture of NFTs is. You don't want to own your punk, even though I love Avalanche, but you don't want to burn your Ethereum punk into an Avalanche punk, because the whole value of the Ethereum network and the user base is way bigger. That's where the NFT started. So the Ethereum, your Ronin and everything will be on Ethereum. It will not be on Avalanche. And then we will be able to read them. So all the social aspects and everything, people are going to be able to come from any place. And for the game itself, the role-playing aspect, the combats and everything, going to be an Avalanche, because you need to do some frequency transactions that you don't want to pay $100 to transact every time.
Yeah. So you'll have like your base characters will be on Ethereum because they don't change a lot.
Yeah.
But then everything relating to game logic and items and stuff like that will be on Avalanche, and it will be much faster and cheaper. That makes sense.
Yeah.
And Harmony, yeah. Don't get me started on Harmony, man.
Me neither. I hate to shit on projects, but yeah. No. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, maybe in the future. Maybe in the future. Who knows?
Yeah.
So okay. I'm gonna kick off the Q&A, and for the first question, we have Hoochie on stage.
Oh,
hey.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, what's going on? Yeah, I'm the Hoochie Coochie, man. I just wanted to ask a few. It's some questions that I know already, but it's frequently asked questions from the community and stuff. Like, will the Ronin Zeros be able to be rented out?
What do you mean?
After we mint them, would they be able, like, say we don't feel like playing the game right now? Can we rent them out to other people?
Yeah, you'll be able to rent them out. Not at the start, but when the game marketplace will launch, you will be able to rent them out.
Okay.
For other people to breed them, or yeah.
Bet. And another question. About the breeding system, how would the breeding system work? It won't be overly bred, will it? So to bring down the value of the community, right?
Yeah, definitely. Like we were talking about this last time, and the breeding mechanics is really carefully crafted, in the sense that we don't want to have too many Ronin in the market, because otherwise the floor price would drop drastically. And we saw that in other projects. So first of all, obviously there's cooldowns, and there's all balancing with hours spent in the game that gives you the power and ability to breathe. And second of all, the latest Ronin, the new generations have a difference in bonus stats and everything. So the latest generations will be less valuable than the first generation, but the cooldown and the mechanics will drop a big Medium article about this in the next 2 weeks, or before we mint the NFTs, that will explain to you how the breathing is trying to be balanced. But yes, I mean, overall, it's just about giving a timeout of breeding compared to the growth of players.
Okay, cool. I was about to say, I got one last question, and it's about the Dutch auction. Say the Dutch auction, we get some whales in there, and they buy the last one at 10 Ethereum. So the people that's
What did you say?
The Dutch auction, I don't really know how that works. So what if the last sale was at like 10 Ethereum? Would that be a problem?
It's not possible.
Okay. Can you explain a little bit?
Yeah. So basically the Dutch auction will start at a price. So I don't know, let's say 1 Ethereum, just for example's sake. And basically the price will drop. It's not going up. The price is going down every 20 minutes of 5%. So basically what will happen is when the first price comes, people in the market will have 20 minutes to mint it at that price. And then if, I don't know, like 50% or 70% have minted at that price, then the price drops. And when it drops, there's another opportunity for people to buy at a lower price. So basically, the Dutch auction is trying to figure out what is the right price for that asset. But it's extremely important that the Dutch auction do not start at a high price, because otherwise it's predatory mechanics from the team, which is not our case. The price will start at a reasonable price, lower than the most famous project, and it will go down as the time goes. So it will depend on you and how, what you think the price is right. But basically, if it starts at, I don't know, like 0.7, and you want to wait for the price to drop, but then it doesn't drop because it's been minted out in the first 5 minutes, then you don't have a chance to buy at a lower price, and you're basically priced out because all the Ronin have been sold.
Okay, cool. That's these are questions that's going around the community. I'm just giving the feedback. And when are the voice tryouts, man? I want to be a voice.
Yeah, you're gonna be a voice in the game, definitely.
Hey, thanks, man. Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks, sir.
Thanks for your questions and for your voice.
Thank you, man.
He has such a voice, man.
Yeah, let's take another question from Naruto. Oh, he just left. That's so sad. Okay. I'll get someone else. Let's see. We're going to have Unicorn.
Hello.
Welcome.
Hi. So I just have one question regarding the breeding mechanics, because I haven't heard this asked before or was answered before. So in regards with it, when we say breeding, does it necessarily mean we need a one female Ronin and one male Ronin, or it's just I have two Ronins in my wallet and I can breed them regardless the gender?
We're open-minded in Ragnarok. We can let you breed whatever you want. You can breed an ape and a punk if you want, or a cyborg and a guy. We're super open-minded.
That's 2022.
I see.
Yeah, it's 2077.
I see. So all Ronins are genderless, right?
Yeah, I mean they're not genderless, but because there's three races that are genderless, which are the ape, the punk, and the cyborg. Mm-hmm. They don't have a gender. And there's two genders that have slight differences in their stats and mm-hmm. and looks. I mean, huge difference in look. But small differences in stat, which is the guy and the girl. But it doesn't impact the breeding at all.
I see. So it's okay if I use a Ronin ape and a Ronin cyborg, and let's say they're both male, so I can breed them, right?
Yeah, and basically there's going to be different strategies to adopt when you breed. So if as I said, the cyborg and the ape doesn't have gender, but if you mint, for example, a guy and a cyborg, if you breed them together, the outcome will differ from if you breed a girl and a cyborg.
Mm,
there's going to be some differences in the outcome. because of the parameters and everything. And it's the same if you breed an ape with a cyborg or whatever. It's going to be slightly different if you breed a white ape or if you breed a brown ape, because they have different rarities and different stats. And and what does the ape have as items? There's going to be differences if you breed an ape that has a bubblegum with with the bat, with the cyborg that have pixel horns and a lightsaber. There's going to be, if you breed them both, or if you breed the same two types of characters but with different items, the outcome will differ.
I see. And last question. This is just a follow-up. Regarding, again, with the breeding. So when you breed them out, so they will become one Ronin, right? So will it come with a PFP with your character? Or it will come? Nice, nice.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Nice, because I was thinking about, you know, if you're familiar with Pegaxi, you know, there are four types of horse Pegaxis there. So when you breed one, you don't, you know, you don't get any PFP. You just get...
Oh, no, you get it. Oh, you get the PFP. Everything has been designed.
Nice.
All the new generations are Ronin. They're new Ronin. It's just that they're different in generation, but they will have different looks, but it's the same type of profile picture that you saw in the teasers. They just have different items and different bonus stats and all this kind of stuff in game. But as a profile picture, they look as cool as the Ronin's hero.
Okay. Thank you so much, Brent, for a nice talking with you.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you.
All right. Let's do... Thanks for that question, Unicorn. Let's do the next one from Abyss. Hello, Abyss. Are you there? Hey.
Hey, yeah. Am I audible?
Yeah.
What's up?
Yo.
Yeah, thanks. So, first of all, big fan, man. I love the way the whole anime art is going on the Ragnarok. And like personally picking, I've been an MMORPG lover since my childhood. So I've played all the big games like Guild Wars 2, then Elder Scrolls Online, and all that stuff. So coming to that social aspect that you said, so suppose I have a Kara, so I can go around and socialize with everybody in the Ragnarok metaverse with my Kara as my character, right? That's my avatar.
Yeah.
So the next question comes is that suppose I'm just socializing and I also do have a Ronin. So I want to go questing with my friends. So how will that work? Like, will I be able to transform into my Ronin all of a sudden, or is that a whole different area of the game that I need to go to? Sort of.
Nah, you just select the Ronin from your wallet because everything is linked with your wallet. So when you connect your wallet to MetaMask, well, basically in the UI of the game, you will be able to choose which NFT you want to hang out with. You can hang out with your punk if you own a punk, or your bored ape, or your Ronin. And basically, the only request that will happen is when you will go on the war portal towards the wilds. And in the wilds is where the role-playing aspect comes into fruition. And that access will only be allowed if you are equipped with your Ronin. So you just switch on the your UI of the game on what character you want to land with.
Okay, that sounds awesome. So the Ronins, we'll be minting them on Ethereum blockchain, and the game itself will be on AVAX. So, and also other NFT PFPs will be on the ETH. So how is that going to work inside the game?
So basically, I was saying that earlier, there's two aspects of the game. There's the social aspect and there's the role-playing aspect. In the social aspect, the social aspect is not on one chain. There's not AVAX or Ethereum or whatever. Basically, what we do as a game is we read, because there's no combat, there's no earning aspect, is we read what you have inside your wallet address, because your wallet address is the same if you're in Ethereum or AVAX or Harmony or whatever. It's the same wallet address. And basically, we read what you have in that wallet and we translate it into a gamified character that you can hang out with socially. So you don't need to be an AVAX or whatever to hang out socially with other people. That's the power of blockchain, in the sense that we can read whatever you have. So you will be able to hang out with your NFTs. And when you go on the role-playing aspect, this is where we will read what you have. If you have the Ronin, we will just read that information from your Ethereum wallet, and then we will translate it into the game character that will be able to go kill monsters and loot objects and all that role play that will happen at AVAX. Do I make sense?
Yeah, now it's much more clear. Thanks for that answer, man. Really excited.
Awesome. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Awesome. Awesome. Thanks for the question. And that will be the last one. But I wanted to thank you, Fan, for coming here and giving me your insights on number seven and also on the metaverse.
Are you convinced or what?
Look, I'll tell you what. I am still a boomer. Didn't get any younger during this this spaces. But I can see what you mean. It's very hard to imagine. It's very hard to imagine. Yeah, but I can see us getting there. I'm excited for it.
Awesome.
So awesome. Thank you for your for explaining me like I'm seven, and thanks for everyone for joining. We'll keep tracking your progress. We'll see what's happening.
Sure. Thank you for having me. It was awesome.
I hope I can use Froyos in the Ragnarok metaverse eventually.
Why not?
Okay, great.
All right, but we gotta eat them though. Well, there's gonna be a Froyo shop where you can eat those cats.
That's a fitting ending for my story.
Yeah.
Awesome.
All right. Thank you for having me, man.
Talk to you later.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Thanks for checking out another episode of The Ether. That was the Universe Explores the Metaverse with Oxfam Farron Space, recorded on Thursday, March 10th, 2022. This episode of The Ether was brought to you by Luart. Luart is the first gamified NFT platform built on the Terra network. Luart provides a seamless minting and trading experience, all while earning you rewards just for being a user. Be sure to follow them on Twitter and join the community in the Discord server for the most up-to-date news and announcements regarding all the hot new NFT launches, platform upgrades, and new projects hitting the secondary marketplace. Are you ready to put your helmet on and join the movement? Find out more at luart.io. This episode of The Ether was also brought to you by WeFund. WeFund is a community crowdfunding cross-chain incubator on Terra, and it's the first launchpad that implements a milestone funding release system to protect investors. All money raised for projects is deposited in Anchor Protocol, and it's refundable, and all decisions are based on community voting power. WeFund is community-focused and designed to be a user-friendly experience for both project creators and investors. Be sure to follow them on Twitter and join the Telegram for more information. Links are in the show notes, and check them out online at WeFund.app. This episode of The Ether was also brought to you by Glow Yield. Glow Yield is the ecosystem of Terra decentralized apps like Lotto and Creators, all powered by DeFi Yields. Glow Creators helps artists and influencers give their fans exclusive perks through membership, NFTs, and more. Glow Lotto is a PrizeLink savings account with a weekly chance to win the big jackpot. Tickets are free and perpetual, which means there's zero chance to lose money. Be sure to follow Glow Yield on Twitter and join the Discord community to stay up to date with all the glowing projects, and check them out online at glowyield.com. Terra Spaces appreciates the support from all our sponsors. For TerraSpaces.org, I'm Finn. Thanks for listening.
When we blow through the dust, volcanoes erupt. No one ever guessed that the game would be tough. Keep your hands off when the play is a bust. Plain old and just, so we keep it on the one. Blast off on the two, help me see the three. Third eye open wide, checking out the scene. Laser beam focus, Starscream jokers. Living off the fat of the people they approach. Tell me what happens when the land fights back. With the cliffs at our backs, make the last stand matter. No one ever planned for the famine on deck. We was walking all a wreck with a dead man's swagger. Sitting in a little den, envisioning the middlemen. Listen to the fiddle man play a little ditty, then talk about how all the leaders seem reptilian. Lost in the maze, trying to make the next billion. Talk about how all the leaders seem reptilian. Lost in the maze, trying to make the next billion. In a little den, envisioning the middlemen. Listen to the fiddle man play a little ditty, then talk about how all the leaders seem reptilian. Lost in the maze, trying to make the next billion. No one gave a shit till the drugs all dried up. Everybody died from a bad batch of Lysol, but it didn't matter, we was all hyped up. When the pedal lit the metal, he just didn't have the right skill. Watched in the daytime till the night curfew. Rats in a cage till they make time to murk you. Got a little job that falls under my purview. We gotta get this mob away from the bird's view. Gotta find cover, wipe off the bird poop. Ride off the work while you try on the worst juice. Blinded by perps who try to reverse truth. Slide like Fox News just trying to lie to you. Eating up the slop like a bunch of hungry vagrants. I can't wait for the day they lock us up in stasis. Mock up a basement, could call me resilient. Waiting for the internet to make me a billion. Envisioning the middlemen, listen to the fiddle man play a little ditty, then talk about how all the leaders seem reptilian. Lost in the maze, trying to make the next billion. Talk about how all the leaders seem reptilian. Lost in the maze, trying to make the next billion.
Terror spaces.